Welcome to Downton.
Hello there. Emma speaking. Welcome to Shall We Go Through, the Downton Abbey fan podcast.
What?
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 Hi, everyone. I hope you are doing well. And I hope that you are ready for this episode. Because, like I told you last week, it's one of my favorite episodes of this season, but also of Downton. I may be biased because it's actually my favorite storyline. It's one of my favorite part of this storyline. Very heartbreaking. I know, like every time I watch it, I'm like, why? But it is my favorite. Don't ask me why. Okay. I have no idea. And obviously, because my favorite is I'm going to talk about it at the end, because we have to end with the best storyline and the best characters, obviously, were my favorites anyway. So you have to wait a bit. But I hope everything is fine for you. And if you're not doing well at the moment, I hope that this would cheer you up or help you, I don't know, try to forget whatever problems you have and just focus on problems that fictional characters have. So yeah, let's just start, shall we? So we're here to talk about episode 3 of season 5 of Downton Abbey that I called The One Full of Surprises. And we are going to start with Mrs. Patmore, because Mrs. Patmore receives a letter and she seems troubled. Even Daisy, she notices something is the matter. Something in this letter is upsetting her. And she talks about it with Mrs. Hughes. She talks about her nephew, Archie. I don't know if you remember, but during the war, like in season 2, her nephew was shot for cowardice. Well, actually, I think her nephew went missing and she asked Robert for help and he said that he was shot for cowardice. That was like a huge deal back then. And I really liked that scene in season 2 because Robert was very sweet. It was not unkind at all. Like I said, we will never know the full truth of what happened. They say cowardice, but you don't know like what happened. You were not there. And obviously it's still a very triggering subject. And now she has just learned that Archie's name will not be on the memorial where his family lives. And the locals, they don't know that he was shot for cowardice. Obviously, this is not something that you would say to everyone. So obviously, they will expect to see his name on the memorial. And Mrs. Patmore so says to Mrs. that maybe if I could tell that he was included in all memorial at Downton, maybe, you know, like they wouldn't ask the question why he is not in the memorial where he, the rest of his family is. And so Mrs. obviously said, well, did you ask Mr. Carson? And Mrs. Patmore is like, yeah, well, I thought you might ask him because everyone knows, you know, you got him wrapped up around your little finger. And it's just like, well, everyone is wrong. But not really, you know. I see what, you know, she's right in a way that if it's Mrs. Hughes who asks something to Mr. Carson, there's more chance for Mr. Carson to agree than if it's somebody else. But you see that it's very, like, she's desperate. She really wants, please ask him. And so Mrs. Hughes, she talks about it with Carson and he doesn't want to add Archie's name on the memorial. He even said, like, to add the name of a coward in our memorial, like, absolutely not. And Mrs. Hughes, she tries to, you know, soften the whole thing. Like, we know more about Shellshock now than we knew before. So why are we sure that he was just for cowards? Maybe something happened, you know, like she tries to convince him. He is not. He says, no, that's final. And so then Mrs. has to tell Mrs. Patmore, and obviously she's very sad, even like she's very upset about that. And Carson then tells her that he's not unsympathetic to the situation, but that does not really help her. Like, it doesn't solve my problem. And at the end of the episode, when they are preparing everything in the hall for the tea for the Russians, Robert notices that Mrs. Patmore is not all right, because we know that Mrs. Patmore is Robert's favorite. Like, Robert, he has a soft spot for Mrs. Patmore. You know, there's something. And he notices that she doesn't look all right. And he asks Carson what it is. And Carson says, well, it's nothing to trouble you with. Usually it's Robert's favorite line to say. So the fact that Carson uses it for Robert, it's actually quite funny. But I really like that he sees that there's something wrong. And it's not the end, obviously, of that storyline with Mrs. Patmore's nephew because he talked about the memorial until the end of the season. And Robert, he's kind of stubborn, so he will want to know what is happening. So we just have to wait and see. Bananas. To stay in the kitchen, let's talk about Daisy. There's not much, but, you know, we have starting this new storyline for her of her wanting to study again and to learn new things. She has nothing but praise for Miss Bunting. It's like she's discovered a new world. Like, she sees the world in a new way now that she has all this knowledge and that everything seems more possible. Now, when she says, when she explained it all to me, it just seems so easy. And she says that I have quite a talent now that I've started. Like, she's much more positive and much happier now. She realizes that she's not an idiot. She just needed someone to help her. And Mrs. Hughes, she congratulates Daisy on her mathematics because she heard that she's getting on well. And Mrs. Hughes is really on her side because, especially I think sometimes because Carson is not really for all these study things, Mrs. Hughes, sometimes you even think that she's even more for it, like on Daisy's side, because it makes Carson angry. Just like in that scene where, you know, Miss Patmore was very upset about this whole thing with her nephew and Carson, who doesn't want to add the name on the memorial. And then Daisy asked Carson if he wouldn't object her sitting an examination when she's ready. And he's like, well, you should probably ask Mrs. Hughes or Mrs. Patmore. And she said, yeah, but you won't mind. Say, well, I'm not for this. I don't believe it's useful or whatever. And Mrs. Hughes, she's like, you know what? I think you should go as far in life as God and luck allow. Like, you go, girl, and don't listen to Mr. Carson. But I really like that she has people that encourages her. It's like, you know, you have the right to learn new things. You know, even Miss Baxter, she's like, you have a new notch up your belt. Like, you have a new set of skills. Like, it's great for you. And I like it. But, you know, Mr. Carson, he wants everything to never change. So obviously, this is like the huge change because that means that Daisy could do anything than just being a servant. So yeah, I have to say Mrs. is usually always right. So I really like that she encourages her. And I like this story. And I think it's nice to see Daisy really growing up. You know, like she has gone a long way from the little scullery maid that we see in the first season, in the first episode. And I think this is really nice. Then to stay with our servants, let's talk about Thomas, because again, new storyline for him, because when now he can't blackmail Baxter anymore because he has nothing against her. So there's something new for him. And when he goes into Carson's pantry and he asks him if he can make a phone call in private. And I just thought, because make a phone call, Carson's like, well, don't make it a habit. And he just stays at his desk. And Thomas's like, well, I was wondering if I might be, if I could be alone. And Carson is like, oh. And, you know, I think, of course, if you want to make a phone call, you would like to make it in private. Like, you have almost no private lives when you work in service. Like, you know, and the fact that Carson was like, I thought I could stay there. Like, yeah, please, can we have some privacy? But I just love when Thomas closes the door and Carson's like, oh, yeah, okay, so that private. So, like, I'm shut out of my own office. And when he makes his phone call, he has a magazine. And so he telephones and says something about an article called Choosing Your Own Path. And then later, Mosley says that there's a telephone call for Thomas. So there's something around it. And then in the servants' hall during dinner, Carson talks again about all these telephone calls for Thomas. And he says that his father's ill and that he has to leave in the morning. He even says, if you want me to be able to see him alive, like, he should leave in the morning. So obviously Carson's like, oh yes, just go. Like, you know, at first like, oh, you have to go. And he's like, oh yeah, just go. And Miss Baxter, she's very sympathetic. She says, oh, I'm very sorry. Like, I remember your dad. He was always nice to me. And, you know, Thomas's like, well, you don't need to pretend that you like me. And I really like Baxter, who says, you know, it's not because I don't want to be a spy that I don't care about you. And I think this is very nice that it shows that she is genuinely a nice person, because most people would just say, I don't want to have anything to do with you anymore. And she still cares about him after everything he has put her through. Like, this is, I mean, yes, she owes him this job, but I mean, the condition were like, not very nice. And I just like that she's still like, I still care about you. It shows also a lot of strength, I think, because you could have easily said, I don't care about you and I don't give a damn whatever happens in your life. Like, Betty is more like that. It's like, I don't care about Thomas at all. And then you have others like Baxter, and I like that. And so obviously it's a new storyline and I don't know about you, but I never bought the whole father is ill, because when you see something about a magazine and something calling choose your own path, and when you know a bit about Thomas, like, that doesn't sound like the greatest choice he would make in his life. Like, I don't know, but not really buying the whole father is ill situation. But this is a very interesting storyline and I really like it. That's also why I really love this season. I think the storylines for the characters, except two, but that we'll talk about it later. Like, there's, I think, a story that's really interesting for almost all the characters. Not all, but almost all. And I think it helps them grow, like how far they have come since season one. I think it's amazing. And I like this story with Thomas, even if it's really heartbreaking bananas. Talking about heartbreaking storylines, I think most of the story is just heartbreaking, but so let's talk about Edith. There's where Mr. Drew has come up with a plan that she will take a great interest in Marigold, like being some kind of a godmother's something like that for her, because like he said, they needed a way for Edith to live the truth without telling the truth. And since the beginning, we have seen that Mrs. Drew, she was not happy with the plan. And so at breakfast, when there are breakfast, so Edith, Tom, Robert, and Cora, Edith says that she is going to Yew Tree Farm. And where Cora, she's amazed by how fond Edith is of that little girl, because you can be fond of a child, yes, but like this, she senses there's something, like she almost not treats her like her own. I mean, we know that she's her daughter, but you know what I mean. And she tries to talk about it with Robert, like she tries this, and Robert, he's very negative almost all of the time, okay? And she tries, and he says something like, oh, I just hope she isn't driving the mother mad. But it's this scene, it's, I know we're talking about Edith in October, but she looks so like taken aback when he says that, like they don't even have a proper conversation about it, like it's just my poor Cora. But so Edith goes at Yew Tree Farm, and then later back in Downton, when the children are down for tea, you see how sad she looks, because you have Tom, he has his girl Mary, she has her boy. And Robert's thoughts about this whole thing about the Drew girl, he's right in a way that you see that she has to watch her sister's children play while her own daughter is not with her. So I think it's even sadder in a way that, because Robert just thought that she's, sad because first Gregson is probably dead, so she's not near getting married and having a family technically, and both her sisters had children. But I think what we know is even sadder, because her child is not that far. Like, her child is near, but at the same time it is very far. I don't know if you understand what I mean, like, because she can't have it because of her reputation and whatever. And then when they're all in the drawing room, Cora says she's going to London, and she asks everyone if someone wants to come with her. And Edith says that she can't, because she says she look after Marigold, because Mrs. Drew has to take one of the boy to the dentist. And Cora's like, but can't someone else do it? It's like, no, I said I'll do it. So again, you see that she's not just, I want to be involved in her future situation. She's really like, I want to be involved in her life, period. Because this is just like, she just wants to spend as much time as she can with her own child. And I'm really like, I'm sometimes amazed that no one figured it out, but then, sometimes when you really do want to keep something a secret. So when Edith is looking after Marigold, when Mrs. Drew comes home, she doesn't find them. And she starts to panic because she thinks that she has just taken the child and left. Then she finds them outside. Edith leaves, but Mrs. Drew is very upset by this whole situation, and she has an argument with her husband. She wants this to stop. And when she says, no, I'm sorry if she's lonely, and she, even if she wants a child of her own, but she can't have ours. And so even Miss Ju said, I thought she was the one who had a soft spot for you, but maybe it's the other way around. Like you really like her, that's why you are okay with this plan. I am so on Mrs. Drew's side because when you see on her point of view, this is exactly what it looks like. Like Edith wants a child, she just find it, and she wants not to play around, but it looks like it. And I will say that every episode until this whole story of Reline is over, but everything would have been easier, better, whatever, if she knew the truth. Because there's the fact that she's the way she said that. No, I'm sorry if she wants a child, but she can't have our own. If she had taken the child knowing they was someone else's mother, she would not have acted like that. She wouldn't, maybe she would never have accepted to take the child, probably. But a part of me thinks that maybe she would have, because she's still a mother. For me, it would have been so much easier and she would have reacted differently. Like, yeah, everything would have been better. Maybe she would not have been really happy with the plan. Like, they're literally just here to play some kind of cover for Edith. But the fact that she just thinks that Edith is like, just because she's bored, it's sad. What's nice though is that some people do care about Edith and observe and notice things like Tom. And he even asks Mary about Edith. He says, because she seems distracted to me. And Mary's like, I wouldn't know. I don't care. Like the fact that even Tom asks Mary, this is no, like don't talk about it with Mary. You know she doesn't care. Like anyway, at the end of the episode, Anna, she comes to find Edith, during the tea for the Russian thing, to tell her that Mr. Drew is here, and he tells her that she has to stay away for now because his wife is very angry. She doesn't want her to come back. Obviously, she's very sad about it, and she comes up by the servant staircase, and Mrs. Hughes and Anna see her cry, and I'm pretty sure that Mrs. Hughes has a vague idea of what all this is about, between the conversation that Edith and Mr. Drew had, and the picture. I think she is starting to gain a vague idea of what all this is about. And I'm very, very sad. And I know a lot of people will blame Edith for this whole situation, especially because things are going to get not pretty and really bad. But I can't just blame Edith because she's just trying to do what's best for her and her child. So yes, maybe she is a bit selfish, but at the same time, almost her whole life she has spent without no one paying attention. And this is actually the truth, because if you watch it, most of the time, the main focus of her parents has always been Mary and then Sybil, and she has always been in the middle and she grew up like that. So she just tries to do her own life without, now that she is a bit like she's not completely independent, but more than she used to be because she has her own money with her articles. Like she tries to be her own woman, so she tries to find her own solution because everyone else tells her what to do and she's tired of it. She was supposed to leave her child and all that. I'm going to talk about it again a bit more when the time comes, but I can't blame Edith. We're not entirely for this because I don't believe this is entirely her fault. Now, let's talk about a storyline that I don't like, because it involves, well, Anna and Bates, I do like them, but it involves Mr. Green. He's still here. It's like Pamuk, they're dead, but they're still there. Like they still haunt the house and the characters, and it's very upsetting and annoying. Last episode ended with Sergeant Willis coming to Downtown to say that there was a witness. There's someone who witnessed Green's death, and apparently it is not an accident. So Sergeant Willis is here with Carson to talk about that witness. And apparently Green talked about a quarrel at Downton. And Carson is like, I don't remember him having a quarrel with anybody. If there is one person who had something against him, it's me because he caused such a chaos. But apart from that, I don't remember. And so Carson, he talks to Mrs. Hughes about it. Like, do you remember if Mr. Green had any quarrel with anyone? And Mrs. Hughes is like, no, I don't remember. Mrs. is really good at lying. Like she's a really good actress. It must be so hard when you know that it's not just a quarrel that will happen. Like, and especially, I think it must be very hard to have someone investigating the death of someone that you're like, aren't we just all happy that he's dead? You know what I mean? And so Mrs. Hughes, she talks about it with Anna, and Anna is so worried for Bates. First, she is worried about the fact that Bates might have guessed that it was green. She thinks like, she's like, maybe he guessed it. She's worried about that. And she's also worried about the fact that they will find out, like, the police will find out what Green did. And so if they find out that, they will say, oh, so Bates killed him to get revenge, which would be a plausible thing. And we know that Bates could be a murderer. Like, he could do it. You know, there's some people, you know, deep in the bone, like, they could not plan a cold blood murder, but we know Bates deep down, he could do it. But part of us is like, if he did it, who cares? You know, what Mrs. Hughes, when she was talking with Mary last season, saying, you know what, I won't, even if he killed that man to save his wife's honor, I won't blame him for that. And I am with Mrs. Hughes on that. You know, like, it's bad. You know, I'm not saying killing people is good, but like, you know, I mean, but anyway, if they, you know, in the end, if it's Bates and if think it's him, and then he will probably hang, which is awful, because Green deserved to hang for what he did. Anyway, and so during dinner, when the servants have the dinner, Anna, she seems so depressed. She says to Bates, do you ever thought about going somewhere else where no one knows us and just start over? Don't you think it would be easier? And Bates is like, what are you talking about? For once, it's him who's really joyful. Usually it's him who's always the sulking person, you know, and like I said, he's a brooder. But this time it's her, because she knows a bit more, she's afraid. Like, so it's very sad to see her like that. You see how anxious she is about what the police might find out. And Mary asks her about Sergeant Willis being here. And like she says, she's still afraid about the whole thing. What if they think it's Bates? What if Bates knew about Green? And Mary's like, but you know, if they thought it was Bates, they would have found something against him by now. Because she knows about the train ticket, because she burned it. So she's very also worried. Even Mrs. Hughes said, the only people who know what happened, the whole truth, it's, well, Anna, Mrs. Hughes, and Mary. Mrs. Hughes won't say a thing. Mary won't either, so, you know. But then Sergeant Willis is back, and he says to Carson that apparently Green didn't like Mr. Bates. Like, he said so to Lord Gilligan's butler. And Carson, he's surprised, like, Bates, I mean, he usually keeps himself to himself. Like, he doesn't really see how that is possible. And so the sergeant is with Bates and wants to ask him some question. Carson is here, and they talk about his day in York, you know, because he said that he spent the whole day in York. And he talks about going to a shoe shop, having a coffee there, and having a sandwich somewhere else. Well, and the sergeant is like, no, it's okay, you know. For him, it's like, there's nothing to worry about. And obviously he's worried. With Bates, they talk, and she says, why would Green invent a crawl? And Bates says something, he says, it's almost as if he wanted to get back at me. Like, he knew I was going to do something, and he wanted to get back at me after that. Like, he planned. It's almost like if he says, like, he planned I would kill him, so he wanted to say everyone that he didn't like me. And Mary, again, with Miss Hughes, they talk about this whole business with Green after Willis talked to Bates, and they're a bit worried, because they found the ticket. And like, but if he said that he was in York, and Monsieur said, yes, but the shoe shop is, it's a 10-minute walk from the station. So he could have gone there. And the sergeant is not the brightest man on the planet, but someone might add, you know, 2 inches together. And they're like, oh shit. Because right now there's no proof that he stayed in York. You have this train ticket, which was not torn, by the way, but apparently none of them has ever taken a train in their life. But I can understand that this was at the time very shocking. You don't even have to think about it, because, you know, the whole news was shocked. But so the police is still investigating the death of Green, and it's obviously not the end, and it will not be pleasant. Bananas. Now, to continue on the storylines that I don't like, let's talk about Mary and Tony. In the first episode, he offered, like he says, he want them to be lovers. The last episode, they were together in a hotel in Liverpool, and he made some really nice declaration that apparently was supposed to be appealing. I didn't find them appealing at all. I found them more funny or whatever. But apparently Mary, she was under his spell or something. I don't really know. Still don't understand this. Anyway, now we're still in Liverpool, and they're in Mary's hotel room together in bed. This scene is very interesting because so then she has her breakfast and he's like, okay, I make a note of that. I have made a note of everything. You know, how you look in the morning, how you dress, how you apply your makeup. Like the guy is, whoa, okay. The guy, it almost looks like a stalker, you know? It's like, why? Is it because I want to acclimate myself to the rituals that will be in our daily lives or things like that? I don't know, because the guys are, because now, you know, we just need to get organized, but everything is settled. Because for him, it's like, oh, we need to set a date away. Oh, I don't want to. Nothing is settled. Okay, we're not going to announce anything until we have really, you know, planned something. And she even says, I have been tarnished once. I won't be tarnished again. So the story about Mr. Pumukka, I'm still on it. Did Carlyle in the end said something or not? Because we know that there were rumors. Because obviously when she talks about Pumukka, right? So did the story come out at some point? Because I find it was weird for her to bring that back, you know? Tell me what you think. But then he goes into his room to take his breakfast. And you see her face. The moment he leaves the room, her face is just, there's a change in her expression. And you see that she doesn't look convinced at all. And I'm like, thank you, Mary. Like, you have finally woken up. He's not for you. And so then they leave the hotel and say, well, we just need to get planned and we talk. He is so happy. He looks like a little boy that just had his, you know, favorite toy for Christmas. I'm not kidding. The guy is very happy. And when so they leave the hotel, Sprat is across the street and sees them. And to talk about Sprat, because he's, you know, linked to this storyline in this episode, back at the Dower House, Isabel is with Violet and they talk about Sprat because Isabel's like, well, how is Pratt? He wasn't there to open the door, so I thought, you know, he might be ill. And Violet says, well, no, he's in Liverpool. His niece is getting married and he had to take her down the aisle. So, you know, he's in Liverpool where we saw him, but you have the confirmation of the fact that he was in Liverpool. And just this conversation, I think it's very, very funny.
Seems rather unlikely to think of Sprat with a private life.
Yes, unlikely and extremely inconvenient.
But you can't begrudge him that, surely. Servants are human beings too.
Yes, but preferably only on their days off.
What I love is every time that Violet says something funny, she chuckles, you know, after saying it. I just love it because she's almost saying something, oh my God, I'm so funny. You know what I mean? I just love it. But we're going to talk about Sprat again, so that's why. But when Mary is back, the family is taking tea and Cora says, oh, Isabel was asking about your trip, but she's coming for dinner, so you could tell her all about it. And Edith teases her about her sketches, say, oh yes, I would love to see your sketches. Where are they? And Mary, she's like, you know, rolling her eyes because she's like, oh, you know, she hates when Edith teases her. But I like it when Edith has a chance to do that because Mary does it all the time and she's even mean. Like, this is not mean. This is really like, did someone truly buy the whole sketching trip? Maybe the parents, because they're a bit blind sometimes about their children, especially Robert, you know, like he doesn't know his kids at all. But Edith never bought it. And Tom, I mean, we never did. I mean, we knew it was not true. But even Bates didn't buy, like, I mean, Mary, I think this was the worst cover ever. But anyway, and Sprat, he's back, so at the Dower House, and he's with Violet. And I just love how he teases something. You know, like, this scene is also hilarious because she's like, so are you all right? Like, everything was fine. He's like, yes, the wedding. Oh, yes, the wedding. Oh, you're talking about that. She's like, Pratt, if you have something to say, just say it. This whole scene is just hilarious. It's like, well, I hope Lady Mary enjoyed her stay in Liverpool. And his voice, everything just makes this character so iconic. I love Sprat. And so immediately he says, no, it's just, you know, she was living in the Grand Hotel with Lord Gillingham. And Violet immediately, you know, she has to find something to say, you know, say, oh yes, they were attending a conference on crop rotation or something like that. They were both staying there. Oh, so you knew about it? Well, of course I knew. What did you imagine? Nothing vulgar, I hope. I just love how she's like, you know, nothing beneath the dignity of a butler in his house. And Sprite starts, you know, to panic, like, no, me thinking something vulgar? Absolutely not. He must be the biggest gossip in the whole show, definitely. I think him and Thomas are the biggest gossips of the show. Together, they could, not today, they could make like a show or a podcast about like the gossip in the houses and in Downton, truly. But so Violet, she saved the situation, really. Brilliantly, obviously. But you see, when Sprite leaves the room, that she looks thoughtful. She's like, oh dear. Because it's not the first time that she had, you know, learned things about Mary. Remember the letter that Susan sent her, the scene with Cora, when she's like, okay, which part of it is true? I see, some of it is true. Oh my God. Remember, this is quite the same situation, except that she had to have a good face for Sprat. That's so back at the Abbey, when they're all in the drawing room, Moseley comes to tell Mary that she has a phone call from Violet. And apparently Violet wants to see her the next day. And that night when she's with Anna and they talk, Anna says, so have you set the date? Oh, there's no hurry. And Anna, she's like, oh, please don't tell me he tries to get out of it. It's like, no, but I don't want to rush into anything. So you see that she doesn't want to rush into anything because she's like, oh, I don't want to marry him. And she asks Anna to take the book and the contraceptive device with her. And Anna, she's not comfortable about it. But she does it. So again, you see how good a friend she is. I like it when she says, I do feel like I'm like helping a scene or something like that, and I'm not comfortable about it. And you see Mary's face. She's like, okay. But so she takes it and she puts the device in her pocket, and you see how nervous she looks. And Mr. Bates, he has to arrive at that moment, and he asks about it, and she says it's something of Lady Mary's. He wants to know why. It's, well, it's private. Bates, just stop. Obviously, you know, you never see anything usually unless it's going to reappear somehow, so bananas. But next day, Mary is at the Dower House, and Sprat asks her about Liverpool, and you see Mary's face. She's like, oh shit. And Violet, then she saves the thing with her story. And so then Mary and Violet had a talk about this. I really like this talk because, you know, Mary, she is really like her grandmother. She's the character who looks more like her grandmother. And despite even just looking like her, she wants to be like her, except that she also wants to be this modern woman. So it's a very interesting interaction.
Obviously, it's very shocking to someone of your generation.
Don't let us hide behind the changing times, my dear. This is shocking to most people in 1924.
Yes.
Can we be confident that there will be no unwanted epilogue?
You can be quite sure.
Well, I must say, that makes a nice...
A nice what?
A nice kettle of fish. Is there any chance of a proposal?
Every chance. He already has. He wants to set the date.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm not saying I approve, because I don't. But it does put things in rather a different light.
Yes.
When will you announce it?
I'm not sure. We haven't decided.
Then you better get on with it. If I was seduced by a man, I would not let any grass grow under his feet if he'd offered to do the decent thing.
I wasn't seduced, Granny.
A young woman of good family who finds herself in the bed of a man who is not her husband has invariably been seduced.
She couldn't have gone to bed with him of her own free will.
Not if she was the daughter of an earl.
I just like it when then Violet's like, oh, so he has proposed. Oh, that, okay. But Mary, she's like, I still don't want to marry him. And I love when then Sprat comes in with the tea, and Violet's like, oh, Lady Mary is telling me all about her conference. And he's like, oh, I hope you enjoyed it. I just love when she says,
I learned a great deal that I never knew before.
And I love the look that she gives Violet, like the exchange of look that they have is like, well, you asked for it. I really love it. But so then at night after dinner, Tom is with Mary in the library and they talk about Tony. And she tells him that she's not sure. It's almost like she woke up. And I just love it. I haven't spent any real time with him until recently. I just love how Tom, he's like, how recently are we talking about? Because is this about your so-called sketching trip? I never bought any word of it. You know, I mean, we don't have that much in common. If it's like before I was, you know, blinded by, and apparently she was like blinded by his good looks, but I still don't get it. I mean, looks are something, but like he doesn't have any charisma. Well, maybe it's just me. But if you had to compare, like Charles Blake had so much more. I don't understand how Mary could have fallen for that guy, or at least been even attracted to him. But yeah, anyway, but I just love how she's like she said, I like him, but I don't want to get married with him. Like we have nothing in common and marriage is for the long run and you have to love the company of that person. You know, I'm saying again what Robert said, the best companion in the world. Like if you, sometimes you can love someone, but you can't even bear staying too much time with them. And I like what Mary said to Anna, like that they're going to live in much close quarters. So whatever happens, you know, we will see each other much more than her grandparents used to do. So I really want to be sure that she wants him. I understand her point and I agree. I just don't agree with Tony getting him. But I'm glad that she woke up in a way. And so Tommy says, well, I'm on your side and I back you up. He said, well, if you back me up too, but we're going to talk about Tom just after Mary. But so then it's the Russian tea. That is the moment, you know, where all the Russians are coming for tea. And Tony is here. He said, well, I wanted to go to see you, Mary, and I want, because I want us to plan. So it has been just a day that they have like separated, like, and he already wants to plan. So the guy, he can't even let her breathe. You know, he's like, well, now we have to plan. One thing that I like about him, I would say one thing. I like that he thanks Isabel because as you have always been very kind to me and I do appreciate it. And I really love it because you see, it costed a lot to Isabel to not approve, but like to be welcoming to any person who would want to share Mary's life, because before that it was her son who used to share Mary's life. So I like that she really took a step and say, okay, I don't want her to be alone her whole life, and if he's supposed to be the one, then I'm going to be nicer person. So I really like that, and I like that he thanks her for it, that he has one thing positive for him. Okay. And so Mary, then she has a talk with Violet in the drawing room. And Violet's like, oh, I hope that if he's here is to make a plan to announce properly the engagement. And Mary says that she won't be hurried. Because Violet, she's like, okay, so what happened, what you did is could be very scandalous. So if now you announce that you're going to get engaged and that you're going to get married, then the whole, even if someone knows about the scandal, it would blow out because then you will get married. But Mary, she doesn't want to get married to Tony. So, no, there's a bit of a conflict here.
The point is, I won't be hurried into anything. Not by you or by him.
But if you weren't certain, why on earth did you go to bed with him? In my day, a lady was incapable of feeling physical attraction until she'd been instructed to do so by her mama.
I don't believe that.
Seriously, my dear. You have to take control of your feelings before they take control of you.
There's a really, really interesting thing that she says, because it's exactly a bit what Mary, like at the moment, Mary, like she said, like she was some sort of trance and now she has woken up. And what I hate about Tony, and this is where we have the problem, is that Mary wanted to spend time with him to know if she wanted to marry him. What he thought was like, you want to be sure, and after you spend time with me, you will be sure. For him, it was just like a condition. He never thought that after that, she would be like, actually, no. And that is the problem. He again thought at her place. He thought he knew what she was thinking. And Charles was right. She's much cleverer than he is. And so obviously, this is not the end for this, because we have Tony on one side who really wants to get married to Mary. You have Mary on the other side who now has just realized that she does not want to get married to him. And you have Violet who knows what happened. And she's like, okay, you need to do something. So not the end. And Tony is going to get even more and more and more annoying bananas. So we talk about Tom saying that he would be on Mary's side. So in the same scene, he asks her, well, I'll back you up if you back me up too. Like if you are on my side, like if you support me. And she's like, does it concern Miss Bunting or him living for America? And said, I'll know both. She said, well, you're asking a lot because I'm not fond of Miss Bunting and I hate the thought of you leaving. But she says, but I would do it because it's you. And I really like it how, you know, she's like, I love you, but if you have to go, then, you know, I will let you go. But for now, it's what she says. But this is a relationship I really like. You know, I like Mary and Anna and I like Mary and Tom. Mary on her own sometimes have troubles, but I really like it. And I have a trouble with everyone shipping them. I know there are some people that wish that they could have ended together. I do not agree. I like when there are a male and a female character that can be friends, like really, really good friends and support each other without having any sort of romantic feelings toward each other. And this is really a good duo. I really like it. Good friendship. It's like, I'm going to quote, because I'm going to quote Harry Potter another time in this episode, but it's like when people were shipping, when I was a teenager, there's so many people shipping Harry and Hermione and I always hated it because I liked the fact they were true friends, you know, and I just showed that you can be friends, like a man and a woman can be friends. So I'm not for, I mean, if you ship them, I have nothing against it. Just know that I hate it. Well, I do prefer you shipping Tom with Mary than Mary with Tony because that is problematic, but I'm not for it. And Miss Bunting is actually in the kitchen teaching Daisy. Well, she's supposed to teach Daisy, but Daisy has no time because she's preparing the tea for the Russians. And so Rose is like, well, you can come if you'd like. I think Rose has, because we saw that she has changed, obviously, from when we met her. And some people I know were a bit sad that she has changed that much. But she has also grown and she has come from being raised by her mother who hates her. I'm saying that her mother hates her, but her mother is, you know, it's Susan. And having two parents that just don't like each other to living with, I'm not saying they're the healthiest family, but it's much more healthier than what she was used to before. You know, Cora and Robert, they love each other, even if now there's a bit of a trouble. But like their relationship is completely different than what her parents had. And Cora is a completely different person from Susan. And the way that she reacts to anything, you can see, I think, Cora's influence. But also, she still stays this kind of a younger person who likes modern things. But you see how close she is with Cora. Cora is the mother she never had. Because when she says, oh, you could stay if you like because even when she thinks, you know, it would be kind of rude to not ask her because she's here. This is exactly what Cora would say. You know, well, we should give her the option if she wants to dine with us or not. No, that's what she said last episode. So I just wanted to say that because, like, when people say, yeah, but we left her, like, episode 8 of season 4, where she wanted to marry a black man the main reason was to shock her mother. And then she's like, she get present at court and then now she's a different person. But when she got presented at court, it was a year after the whole story with Jack Ross. And then now we at least a year later. So obviously things have changed, you know, and now she takes care of a Russian. Like, she still has this young thing and a bit naive at moments, but you can see Cora's influence in her. Like, she's less, it's like before she just wanted to do things to get back at her mother. You know, she wanted to shock her and, you know, do anything against her mother. And now it's more like she wants to do things for her life. Don't know if that makes any sense, but I'm telling you, this is Cora's influence. Because now Mary, Edith and Tom, it's her family too. It's like she has brothers and sisters she already have, but now she lives with them. Whereas before that, she was alone with her parents. So I think this has to have a good influence on her. But so Rose invites Miss Bunting to tea. And during this tea, Robert sees her. He's like, oh my God, what is she doing here? And Cora says, well, of course she had to ask her. She found her in the kitchen. And she even says, why do you let her irritate you so? Anyway, Miss Bunting talk with the Russian and she says something. And Again, it's also another time where I think she didn't mean harm when she said something, but you're like, you just are just talking to people who had to leave their country and the whole system their life was based on has just been completely wiped off. Like, don't talk about it, just say hello, how are you? I don't know, you know, very basic things. Talk about the weather if you want, I don't know, but like, try not to talk about politics when there are political refugees, you know. That's again. And she actually upsets one, and Robert, I just love how he looks at her like, I told you so. You see what she irritates me? Like, like, oh, I'm right here. He really likes when he's right, you know, because it doesn't happen a lot. And Cora saves the day, but Robert is angry. And I hate the way he says to Tom, keep her under control. First, this is very reducting. This is very, you know, like the man has the like the ascendant on the woman. Like, I hate this whole idea. And again, it pushes Tom away from them, the way he acts, because he associates Tom to Miss Bunting when he does not agree with everything she says, you know, and the way she says it. So this is always like, on that thing, Robert is always wrong. His reaction are always like, he's overreacting all the time. And this is like the keep her under control. You see Tom's face and he's like, great. So again, it's Tom will struggle. He has been struggling for a while now because he's stuck, I would say, but he's really stuck between, I really like her because she represents who I was and who I am deep down, but I like the family because they're my family now. They're family of my daughter. Like, you know, he's in between. And I'm feeling sad for him. And Robert, he has always the wrong reaction. That he would react like that with Miss Bunting, I can understand. But that he would like blame Tom and make it on Tom, because in the end, it all falls back to him. Like, Tom is like, it's not my fault if she's like that, you know? Like, she has her own thoughts and her own opinions, but I'm feeling very bad for him, not gonna lie. And he's just gonna get worse. Wait until we get to that dinner. Bananas. So, we talked about the Russian and Rose already. So let's continue on that. And Violet also, because this is very, very interesting. When they are at breakfast, beginning of the episode. So, like I said, Edith, Tom, Cora and Robert. And they talk about Rose, who, you know, left early to spend her whole day with the Russian refugees. And Cora, she's really proud of that. She's, you know, which is very nice to see, because like I said, when we met Rose, she was very selfish person. Like, she had a selfish part to her. And obviously she was very young. And like I said, I think Cora was very good influence. I want to say Robert, because Robert is a very nice man, but her father is also a kind man. So it was really the bigger shock is definitely switching from Susan to Cora. This can only mean good influence. And in the drawing room, so Rose, she talks about her Russian with Cora and Isabel, and she says that she wants to bring the Russians to Downton. And Robert says that his parents, so Violet and the late Lord Grantham, were there in 1974. So maybe I can find some things that they brought back from their voyage, and so we can put them in display for them. And Rose even says that they're going to spend a day with the Russian to see where the Brontes lived. And at first, Isabel is like, but won't they be sad, you know, or upset about it, about going to Downton? And Rose says, no, they seem to enjoy it, you know. It reminds them of what they've lost. It's for them to compare their vie de château, like she says, to the way they used to live. She says it. So in French, the expression vie de château, which could be translated by like life at the castle or at the palace, because V, it's life, and chateau, it's castle. So it's well, it's an expression. Anyway, and so she organizes this tea, you know, for the Russians. Later, Violet and Isabel are in the churchyard, and they talk about Rose's Russian tea. And Isabel says, oh, you will come, right? Because you have been to Russia, so you have to come. Violet, she's like, well, okay. Like, she has completely forgotten about it. And Isabel's like, we should both go, but you have to go. And she even asked me if she has met some people. I said, oh yes, I have. But I say, oh, do you keep in touch? And I love what Violet says. She says something like, an unlucky friend is like bad enough, but an unlucky acquaintance is even worse, or something like that. But so they are here for the Russian team. The Russians are here, and they look at the memento and everything that they have brought from like the attic, and they are crying. And Robert was like, well, I thought they could enjoy it, but Violet's like, oh, they are enjoying it, but they all cry, you know, watching those relics. And so Violet, she talks about when she was in Russia with Robert and Rose, and she says that they were there for Prince Alfred's wedding in St. Petersburg. So it was with the Grand Duchess Maria, if I remember correctly. And so I just love it when she wants to see the race because she hasn't seen them for years. And this Count Rostov is like, make way, like, you know, because she was there. So at this moment, you realize how Violet is still important, because obviously the way they used to live is exactly how they live now in a downturn. But the way like they look at Violet, like she's this queen, you know, and it's very interesting. But so Violet then talks about a fan, and she says that it was given to her. And she tells a story that it was very hot in the ballroom. Like outside, it was very cold, but inside it was very hot. Then a man coming out of nowhere just talks and says, and I gave you that fan, and you hid it in your reticule in case Lord Grantham would get angry about it. And you see Violet, like, it's like she has seen a ghost. She's like, oh my God. And we are the same. We are like, oh my God, what is happening? My favorite thing is Robert's face. He's like, wow. And so this man says that when he knew that they were all coming to downtown, he couldn't resist the idea of meeting her again. So Violet, she makes the introduction. And so it's Prince Kurágin. And Robert is like, wow, he's amazed. And you see something is happening. There is something behind this story. And then they go to take their tea. But like, Robert's like, wow. I just love his face. He really has the same face of a child. Like, wow, there's something really cool happening right now. Like, this is wow. And I really like Mary talking with Tony and Isabel, saying, Granny has a past. Thank God Papa and Aunt Rosamond were already born, you know, or we can make up all kinds of stories, which is true. Yeah, like, this is wow. I mean, I don't know about you, but the first time I watched this episode, I was like, what? And this is so interesting because we never talk about Violet. I mean, she's always there, but we don't know much about her except the fact that she is the Dowager Countess of Grantham. But like, wow. And so when Violet leaves, Mary says goodbye.
Stop giving me such knowing looks. I met the prince when I was travelling with your grandfather. Nothing could have been more respectable.
Whatever you say.
Away with your impertinent conclusions.
My only conclusion is this. I know now you understand my predicament far better than you let on.
And Violet's her answer, like the way she looks at her, she's like, eh, you're not that wrong. Not gonna lie, this is amazing. And then Violet is with Isabel in the car, and Isabel is teasing her, and Violet doesn't really like that. But I like that Isabel is so happy to be able to tease her about some suitor, because Violet keeps on teasing her about Dr. Clarkson and Lord Merton. And oh, Isabel, she's enjoying herself. And obviously she will not let this go. But you see that Violet, this really did something to her. You know, like, this has bringing a lot of memories. And have to say, I mean, we're curious. I'm so curious. I mean, I know obviously what's the story behind it, but like, I like this story. I like the idea of knowing more about Violet and her past. And this is very, very exciting. And now, before going into the best storyline of the episode, let's talk about Baxter, because Mosley and Cora both, they don't believe that Baxter has told them the whole story. And Baxter, she still doesn't know if Cora wants her to stay or not, because Cora even herself doesn't know. So she's with Cora and she asks her if she made a decision. She says, I just want to know if you want me to leave. I just need to make some sort of plan. Cora, she says, I want you to tell me the missing element of your story, because I know there is. Once you've told me that, I give you my answer. So, hey, she's clever. There's a brain. No, remember Robert? Brain? And before, so Cora is living for London, so Baxter is going with her. And she talks to Mosley about it. And she says, well, I don't know. I think she deserves maybe to hear the whole story. But then after, I want it to get buried. I could never want to talk about it ever. Mosley says, well, make that your condition. Like, she has made conditions, you can do too. The worst thing is she would not agree with that and she will dismiss you. But she will do it if you don't tell her everything. So at least, you know, you have tried. And so where they are in London together, Baxter, she tells her the whole story, and Cora told her that I agree with your condition. So Baxter tells her the whole story, and that if she stole, it's because there was a footman in the house she used to work. She fought for him. But then he actually manipulated her in a way and that she could only do things that he would say she could do. So he made her stole, and he then took all the jewels. And when she arrived to the place that we're supposed to meet after, he never came and she never saw him after that. So she took the blame and he took the money, basically. And you see that Cora, she feels sorry, but I really like her reaction to the story, because when she said that there was this man, he was very handsome, she has this tiny smile like, okay, I know where this is going, you know. It kind of reminds me in season 2 when they talked about Ethel, who was seduced by Sergeant Bryant, and the way she was like understanding, like she's not the first one and she would not be the last. But so you see how sorry she feels about the fact that she took the blame for someone else's, and she says you could have reported him. No, no, I don't want to report him. I just never want to talk about it. Like, this person was a very bad person. And you see that she says that she regrets more the person that she became because of him than the fact that she actually went to prison. It's almost as if she agreed to go to prison because she was ashamed of who she became, so like that. But when they are back at Downton, Cora, she tells her that she may stay, and that if she thinks she should report Mr. Corin, Baxter is like, no, if that makes a difference, like, no, you may stay. And Baxter is really, like, she's really moved and she's very grateful. And Cora, she's not happy, but she's happy to have made someone happy, because obviously she's very down because her husband has been very, very stupid and mean, but we're going there. But so Baxter will stay, and I really like that. I really like their relationship. I think I'm very sad that we don't see much of their relationship, because sometimes I think that we have seen Cora with O'Brien much, much more, you know, talking about various things than Cora and Baxter. When now I think, I truly believe that that moment, something happened and their relationship could move to something more like a friendship. I don't know. And I really love how Cora is happy that Baxter is relieved and happy to stay. And yeah, so I'm really happy that she is staying. I really like Baxter. And I mean, and I love her with Mosley. And yeah, I'm glad that she's staying and that at least one thing has a happy ending, because there's too many heartbreak. Oh no, okay. Because, you know, heartbreak. Are you ready for it? Pun intended, it's the song that I used last episode. So we're going to talk about Cora and Robert and Mr. Breaker. So breakfast, Cora is here, which is unusual. But at breakfast, she says that Mr. Breaker wants to show them the painting from Della Francesca at the National Gallery the next time they're in London. He says she is interested. And Robert's almost like, well, you go, because I can't be bothered, basically. Which, in a way, is like, she also says it because don't you want to spend some time with your wife, stupid man? Anyway, and at the same breakfast, Tom says something about the estate. And he starts to talk, and Robert stops him saying, oh no, we're going to talk about that, you know, when Mary's here, and you know. And it's at the same, so it's the same breakfast where Cora tries to speak to Robert about, you know, Edith, and Robert is answering in the negative, and you see her face, like, I think she just wants to have a conversation with him and he doesn't care. So again, you stupid man. She's not at breakfast much, you know, usually she never here at breakfast, and he doesn't care. Like, who cares about your newspaper? You know, just talk to your wife. But anyway, and then when they're taking tea and Mary is when Mary has come back from her trip, Tom, he talks about Pip's Corner. That apparently someone wants to buy Pip's Corner and bid houses on them. Robert doesn't like the idea. Cora, she listens, but she's not in the conversation, but she listens. Then they're in a drawing room and Cora says that she's going to London because she has a fitting and she says that maybe she will ask Mr. Bricker to show her the National Gallery. And she wonders if Robert can come too, but apparently he has a meeting that he can't cancel, that he has to go. Then she literally asks everybody. She asks Edith, she asks Rose, maybe she probably even asks Mary. Like, she literally is asking everyone to come with her, like anyone. At one point, she would even ask Isis, do you want to come with me? But, you know, maybe not, because Robert was going to say that Bricker is flirting with his dog and probably not a good idea. But, like, she literally asks everyone. Like, she doesn't want to go to London alone. No, she has a fitting and she says, well, I can, you know, go to National Gallery and does someone want to come with me, basically. But no one wants to or no one can. So then that night, when Cora and Robert are together in her bedroom, she says that she misses the wartime. She sometimes think about how busy they were, how busy she was. Like, she had a sense of purpose. Like, she liked the time. And obviously, Robert, he didn't like it because he felt absolutely not busy at all. He felt like shit and he felt unwanted. And we know what happened, right? And he says, oh, surely you don't want to go back to that time. And she's like, no, but I would never like say it outside this room. But Robert, it's almost like he's annoyed by her saying that. And if I remember correctly, he once said to Bates, was it in season two? I can't remember when it was. He misses the war. Like, he really said to Bates, who got injured in the war, that he missed the war, that he kind of loved it in a way. And you're like, Robert, excuse me, what? Anyway, but so he's very annoyed because he remembers the wartime. He doesn't like it. And obviously he must feel very, very guilty because he did some very, very, very bad things. And then Cora, she wants to talk about this Pip's Corner business. Like, say, what is it really? Like, she wants to understand what is it. And he says,
nothing to trouble you with.
I hate this phrase. Robert, stop it. Stop saying it. Because the moment he says that, you see she's crestfallen. You see her. Like, she even sighs. She's like, like, Robert, please. Like, nothing to trouble you with. Last time you said that, it was about the money and you were so afraid that she would leave you and in the end she's still there. Like, can you talk to her? Like, my God, communication, man. You know, I hate it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in the way she talks about the war, like, it's also a sign that she wants to say that she liked to be useful. So she wants to know about the estate. Like, just, talk. Like, you can't read the sign, for God's sake. Anyway, I'm angry. You can feel it? Yeah, I am. And so Cora is leaving for London and Mary, she's with Robert outside with Isis, and he says that his meeting has been cancelled and that actually he wants to give Cora a treat. He wants to go to London for the night and they will go dancing. And I love her when he's very excited about it. Like, I'll give her a real treat. And Mary's like, are you sure it's a good idea? Because I'm not sure about surprises. I don't think that good. It's like, don't be silly. She's going to love it. We're going to have a really good time. He even says to Bates, no, just prepare me just a black tie for not coming back for the night. You don't need to go with me. Because just like what Mary said to Anna, you know, I have his help to put on and take off my clothes. Well, that's probably what he thought, you know, would happen. If he had any trouble taking off his clothes, his wife would help. And well, this time, maybe he should have listened to his daughter or at least warned. And it's great surprises, but like sometimes it's best if you had just said anything. Because then back in London, Cora is with Mr. Bricker at the National Gallery. And I haven't talked about the dress because you see the dress more when she talks with Baxter. And I really like it. Well, I love when Cora is wearing blue. I think it's always suits her perfectly, obviously, because it just makes her eyes even more beautiful. But this color was really interesting because it's more like, how do you call it? Like in French, we call it a bleu canard. How do you say that in English? Like a teal or peacock blue? That's how you say it? Okay, maybe. Because in French, we say bleu canard, like dark blue. Don't know why, but I love this color. And I think it's really interesting. We never saw her wear that color before, right? But I really like it. Anyway, very beautiful. So she goes to the National Gallery with Bricker. Love like her orange coat. Like it's very... She's very classy, very beautiful. And so you see that she is having a really nice time with him. They talk about the painting and she can see things in the painting, and he is, well, first, he can't stop looking at her. He can't take his eyes off of her. Like, he's amazed. He's, like, completely attracted to her, like, definitely. And, well, first, because she's very beautiful, but also by what she says, you know. Like, they talk about the painting, and you see how she likes it and what she says about it. And he's like, wow, you have a sharp eye. And I don't even think he says that just to be nice to her and just to flirt with her. He's really like, wow, you know, like, I've never met a woman like you, basically is why it's happening. And then you see her trying to call Rosamund, and apparently she can't. Simon Bricker, he says, oh, I sent a telegram because he wants to invite her to dinner. Because obviously she doesn't know that Robert is here. She thought that she would just have supper with Rosamund, and he invites her. She's like, why should I refuse? And she's like, I'm quite the wrong clothes. And I mean, he says exactly the thing that any woman wants to hear. He says, you know, you'll be the best dressed woman in all the Ritz, you know, like, you shine, you know, you're like so much better than any of them. And she's so cute, you know, she's like, oh, that cheered me up. Like, she likes the compliment. She likes the flirt as well. Like, she feels great and pretty because he makes her feel like that. And so, but I can't go home too late. And Justoff went, well, you'll be home when the clock strikes midnight. And Justoff said, well, much sooner than that. She's having a really nice time. So she accepts, you know, because he even says, I want to talk about the paintings with you because they speak to you, like, you have an eye, you understand them. And Alfred's like, well, but I don't know anything. Say, but that you don't need to know anything about art to really be able to read it. At this moment, he says further, she's very beautiful. That's very nice to hear. But he also says that she's very clever and intelligent, has nice intuition. Like, he also compliments her brain. Remember, Robert? Brain. It's been so long that someone had said nice things to her. Well, Robert, at their, you know, anniversary, but that was in February. And then we're well past February. You know, we're at least after April, so a month have happened. And just, I understand her. He's just complimenting her and she likes it. Why can't she like it? And he's just right. Little break in the storyline to take time to talk about the French word of the day. Well, French words, which is painting, because, you know, they talk about the paintings, because we have two words for painting, which you would say the way they use it, as in like watching paintings at the National Gallery, you would say un tableau, T-A-B-L-E-A-U. And it's masculine, so it's un tableau. But you can also say une peinture. Like when you say I'm painting, for example, like in the verb, like painting or some paint, we call it peinture. P-E-I-N-T-U-R-E. And it's feminine, so it's une peinture. And it's also like in the action of painting, peinture. And also with what you make a painting, la peinture. But when you go to a museum, you usually would say un tableau. Don't know if that makes sense, but. So painting in French is un tableau or une peinture. So Cora had a nice dinner with Mr. Bricker, and then they are walking around London, and basically he's walking her back to Rosamund's house. I love this scene because for the first time, she really talks about herself. Like, she talks about her youth. Like, you know, she says, I love London, you know, like I forget, but I do. It reminds me when I first got here. I said, but you don't want to hear about it. I said, yes, I do. I'm interested. So she tells her story that she was scared at first because, well, it's a big change. She was just in New York, and she talks about how she arrived there, that her mother was eager for her to go to London because, you know, her father was Jewish and the money was new. So they were not in the high rank of society in Cincinnati, and even less when they were got in New York. Basically, if you watch The Gilded Age, it's the Russell family. And so, you know, she thought she would make a better match on the other side of the Atlantic. And she says, well, there was a lot of money and I was pretty. And I love when she says, I suppose I can say that now that I'm an old lady, you know. And he says, well, I'm sure like everyone loved you. And she says, well, I suddenly get a lot of names on my dance card. And she's just so sweet because then she even feels sorry. She says, well, I'm bragging and I'm sorry. I'm a bit lightheaded. I never talk about myself. And it's so sad because every day she has to listen to everyone else's problems. Well, now maybe her children has a bit less of a problem, but every time. And she never talks about herself. Like, This makes me really sad because her story is just so interesting. And I want to know more. I want to see it. You know, every time I say something, I'm like, I want the prequel. Like, I want to see young Cora arriving for the first time in London. And she's just so happy to talk about it because she realized she never talks about it. Sometimes I always think about if she told this story to her children, like if someone was interested. I keep thinking that Sybil would probably be the one who'd be the most interested by her mother's story, because Mary keeps saying that her mother is American, that she's not. So I'm not sure if she was even interested by her mother arriving to London. But this scene is just, I mean, you see, she's very, very happy to say that. And where, like, she says, I'm a bit lightheaded, so maybe they had a bit to drink. But like, she's not completely drunk, you know, but she had a nice time. And, you know, when she's back at home, almost no one pays attention to her. Even her husband always says that she tries to have a conversation and he always shuts her out. So, and say, well, you know, that's time for the evening to end, like, because they're almost there. And he's like, can we just take another walk around like the corner and pretend it's not over? And said that he really enjoyed this night, that he would like to do it again. And she says that they should not, but she takes the offer as a compliment. You know, I'm not a fan of Simon Bricker, but just for the smile that he brings Cora, I'm like, I can't hate you, man. Well, not now, basically. You know, when she's just being who she is, like, she had a nice time with him. Maybe they flirted a bit, but nothing bad. You know, even now he says, can we do that again? I doubt it. You know, like, she tells him gently that no, we shouldn't, and I don't think we would, but thank you very much for that good night. There's nothing wrong in that. And now, well, there's a huge contrast between the scene we just talked about and the one that's just coming. So she comes home and, well, I'm going to put the clip of the whole scene because it deserves to be heard in whole, and I'm going to talk about it later.
I hope you got my cable. But I've had such a nice time. Robert, I didn't know you were coming up to London. You never gave me a clue.
It was meant to be a surprise. I got a table at Claridge's so we could make a night of it.
I am sorry. Should we telephone?
Don't worry. I cancelled everything when we got Mr. Bricker's telegram.
Where's Rosamond?
Upstairs. She gave me your dinner and went to bed.
I'm dreadfully sorry.
So you said.
Wait a minute. I don't see that I've done anything to make you angry.
No? I travelled to London in order to give my wife a treat, only to find she's out dining with another man.
Mr. Bricker wanted to discuss the paintings. Rosamond had said she needed an early night. Why was it so wrong for me to accept his invitation?
Bricker was interested in discussing the pictures with you.
Yes? Is that so difficult to believe?
That an art expert would find your observations on the work of Piero della Francesca impossible to resist. Yes, it is hard to believe.
I'm going to bed.
Cora.
It's quite all right. You said what you think and you've every right to do so.
Know what hurts the most in this scene is that Robert is angry. He's been angry since the moment, I think, they got Mr. Bricker's telegram. And she comes home. She's happy because she had such a nice time, like she says. The moment she sees Robert, she's even happier. Her smile, her reaction, her face, she is delighted to see him. She's like, her smile is even 10 times bigger than when she was with Mr. Bricker. Like, she is so happy to see him. And he just acts like an asshole. There's nothing more to say. Like, he really makes her feel that she did something wrong when she did not. She keeps saying, I did nothing wrong. Because if she had come home and she would have found him here, and if she would have had a reaction, like, maybe, you know, like something awkward, or she was intimidated, or, like, you know, a reaction that would betray the fact, like, that she knew she did something bad. But she didn't. For her, she said, I need nothing bad. And she was so happy to see him, you know. And he is insulting her, literally. And you see the way her face crumbles. I don't even have words for that, because he has hurt her in the worst way possible, because he literally has insulted her when she had just spent a whole afternoon and evening with a man who had nothing to say about her except praise. Like, he kept saying that she's amazing, that she's super clever and has good instincts and whatever. And then she comes home to find her husband. And first she's really happy to see him. And he's basically telling her that, not that she's stupid, but it feels like that. Her face at the end of the scene, it breaks me. Because this could have ended in such a nice way. Like her being happy, him sulking a bit, and then her saying, but I don't know if you were there. Like, if she knew, she never would have gone to dinner with Bricker. She would have said, sorry, I can't, my husband is here, and I prefer to spend time with him. We know that. And she didn't know he was here. Like, I can't. And the way he says that, you know, in a really condescending way, you know, that Mr. Bricker was interested in discussing the pictures with you. She started, like, her expression started to change, like, yes, is that so hard to believe? And the way he just say that an art expert would find your observation impossible to resist, yes, it is hard to believe. Basically, what he says is like, this man is not interested in your observation. He's just interested about getting you into his bed. That's basically what she just said. And this is the most insulting thing ever, because maybe Bricker has other intention, probably, but he never did or said anything wrong, except for at that moment, he still flirts nicely. He's trying, you know, and she's nice. She likes the attention. But Robert has just insulted her like in the worst way. And when I quoted Harry Potter before, I'm going to quote again, because this is much worse than obviously what happened in Harry Potter, because they were teenagers. So you're like, you can understand, but it's the vibe is exactly the same as in a scene in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, where at the Yule Ball, Ron is super jealous that Hermione went to the ball with Victor Krum. And she's super happy because no one has ever paid any attention to her as in her as a girl. And they have this man who's very popular, actually, who likes her and invites her to the ball. And she has waited and waited for Ron to ask her, and he never did. And basically, she's happy and he's not, because he's super jealous. And she's like, what is happening? You know, guys, like, you look all too depressed. And he's like, what are you doing with the enemy? It's like, what the enemy and the purpose of this is to make friends, you know, with wizards from all around the world. And Ron says, well, I think he has something more than friendship in his mind. You know, like, again, very insulting. He's insulting one of the cleverest people ever. And this, her face was the same. She had the greatest night ever. And he just ruined everything. She even said it to him. You ruined everything. And this scene always breaks my heart so much. But this is the same. It's even worse, because we're talking about people that have been married for 34 years. And Cora, she has always taken care of him, except maybe not in the war. But like, Robert, remember what you did the last time you felt unwanted? She just went to dinner with a man who thinks that she is the greatest person on earth. It's funny because the story is exactly the same at this point, you know, than with the maid. The difference is he felt bad and he had another person looking at him like he was, like he had a purpose, you know, like he was a great man. And he kissed her. There weren't even real conversations they had, but, you know, he kissed her 3 times and he wanted to do more. Let's not even go about that. And the worst thing is she was a maid, like he had power over her. Now there's a man, more of an equal to Cora, who likes her, wants to know her opinion, and treats her like she's the greatest person on the planet. She's just going to dinner. They haven't kissed. He asks her to see her again. She says, probably best if we don't do it, because she has a husband at home and she was really happy to see him. And Robert just acts like this, like an asshole. I have no words. I know I'm repeating myself a lot, but I just, makes me so angry, because he really makes her feel like she did something bad. When you're like, Robert, just go back a couple of years ago, you know, and you see something much worse that you did. I'm angry. You know, I remember during the whole Jane storyline that I was more angry at Robert in another story. So it's this one, obviously, I think you got it. That I'm much more angry at Robert in this particular storyline than for the Jane. I'm angry for the Jane. I'm not saying I'm not. But what makes me angrier is that he did much, much worse. And he did it because he felt unwanted. And he's doing the same with his wife, because he kept saying, you know, nothing to trouble you with. And she wants to have conversation about anything. And he just shuts her out all the time. And he can't even realize that there's a pattern. Like, the story is repeating itself. And the difference is, it's not even, like, she's not even having a story with, like, a footman. She's having a story with a man who is kind of her equal. You know, not exactly the same, but, you know, it's not something, someone that she has power over. And she hasn't kissed him. She's just having conversation because it makes her feel nice, beautiful, and intelligent. Remember, Robert, you said that she had a brain. Well, she has one. And she can use it, unlike you, apparently, at the moment. Anyway, I'm gonna go. It's almost over, but tell me what you think. I it's funny because I love this story and it's very angsty, but I love it because I love Cora and I do love Robert, but he's acting so, I have no words. I have a lot of insults, but I don't want it to get too, you know, I don't want to curse too much, you know, but damn, man. Her face when she saw him, they could have gone dancing that night if he didn't react it this way. Anyway, next day, they are back home and you see the way Cora, she gets down the car and she walks straight into the house. Like, she's not looking at him. Like, you see, she is upset. But more than that, she's hurt. I think we have passed the upset thing. She's really hurt. And even when she comes up the stairs and the look like this, even her smile, it's broken, you know? And then when she's in her room and she talks with Baxter, this shot is beautiful, but so sad at the same time. Like, you have her reflection in the mirror and the way she looks at Baxter and her little smile. Like, there's so much sadness in this. And this is such a beautiful picture. She's so pretty, even if she's very sad. But she looks broken. Like, Robert, what did you do? And then she comes down and Robert starts talking to her like nothing happened.
Have you seen what we've dug out for the Ruskies? Well, I say we. Of course, it was Pattinson who did it.
Does it matter? We both know you place no value on my opinions.
Cora, I was cross. I had travelled the length of England to spend the evening with you, and you had gone out. Aren't I allowed to be cross?
You're allowed to be cross, but you're not allowed to be unjust.
And I do have a question. What do you think happened after that conversation of the night before? No, Cora goes to bed. Okay. My question is, where did Robert sleep? Because it was a surprise. And basically what he thought it was, he would sleep in his wife's bed, technically, because they always do that. So did Rosamond took the time to prepare like a dressing room or her room for him when she knows that they always sleep together and he has no valet? Like, you know, my question is, where did he sleep? And the whole journey to Downton, the train, the car, did they talk about anything? Because the way Robert talks to her at that moment, it's like nothing happened. And obviously she's still crossed. Like, she is still upset. She has been hurt. Like, obviously. I wonder what happened. What do you think happened? Really? Like, do you think, where do you think he slept? Like, do you think he slept on the couch? Like, really? Like, on the city and Rosamond found him the next morning? I'm really interested in that too, because Rosamond must have found him in the morning. And I'm very curious about that, because Rosamond must have done something and she must have tried to know what happened. Obviously, Robert would have not said anything, or I don't know. Like, this whole thing, I'm really intrigued. I'm always intrigued by scenes that we don't see, especially by Corbett, obviously. But this, I really am intrigued because they had to take the train together and the car. If you have ideas, please share them with me. I just love how Robert thought, you know, I was just cross. Let's just get over that. And of course, like, you really think we're going to get over that? Because he really placed no value on her opinions, because she asked about Pip's Corner, nothing to trouble you with. She just wanted to talk about Edith and he just say always in the negative. And someone asked her about things about the paintings. He says that, why do they care? So he really thought he would get away with it so quickly. Manu insulted her. Like, just, anyway. And so to end this episode, it's time for my music of the day. This was one of the first songs I thought about when I thought about this idea of the podcast and the idea of the music for a storyline for each episode. Because every time I listen to it, I'm like, yeah, that's basically what happened in this episode in the end. You know, like this famous scene. Well, you could write. So that was Tell Me Why, Taylor's version by Taylor Swift. And isn't it the perfect song for what happened that night? This is exactly what happened, the whole thing. Like, I'm not going to say it again. You heard it. But I thought that was really like, you could write a book on how to ruin someone else's perfect day, because she had a great, great night, a great day even, and he literally ruined it. Anyway, so I thought that was a perfect song. And Robert, I am so angry with you. You are not going to get out of that quickly. Like, oh boy. Anyway, so that's it. That's the end for this episode. I'm happy actually to have ended on Cobra, even if it's definitely not the nicest way to end, because very heartbreaking, but they're my favorites. And this storyline is just so important to me. Like, I don't know why, just I love it. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed it, that you spent a really nice time with me. As usual, if you want to write to me, like send me one of your thoughts, answer one of my questions, you can do it any way you want to. Oh yeah, and obviously the title, the one full of surprise. There were a lot of surprises in this episode, you know. Like, we had where Mrs. Papmore, who had not a good surprise, but her nephew's name not being in the memorial. Edith, not a nice surprise to learn that Mrs. Drew doesn't want her to come to the house again. We have the whole Green situation, again, not a nice surprise. Mary having Tony coming at the house, like, not a nice surprise as well. It's more like full of surprises, but not good ones, you know? We had the surprise of Violet and the Russian, like, this is the greatest thing ever. This is an oh my god moment. And obviously, it was also, the first thing was to make reference to Robert wanting to surprise Cora, and he went wrong. But like, it's even worse than wrong. Like, it was a disaster. So yeah, I will see you next Sunday to talk about episode 4 of season 5 of Downton Abbey. And until then, stay safe, take care of yourself, and don't forget,
vive la différence!